creating an LGBTQ-friendly business is about more than waving a rainbow flag. From South Dakota Public Broadcasting, today is Thursday, June 10th. This is In the Moment. June is National Pride Month. Coming up this hour, SDPB's Megan Feary reports on rainbow capitalism. Then we talk with Sioux Falls business owners about creating inclusive spaces and offices for employees and customers. We peek behind the curtain at a drag queen's first performance. Plus, Eric Helen joins us to talk indoor plants, and Nate Weck recaps the high school state golf championships. We are broadcasting live today from the Kirby Family Studio inside SDPB's Sioux Falls studio. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment. News is first.
With SDPB News, I'm John Wynn. The sponsor of the Keystone XL crude oil pipeline says it's pulling the plug on the contentious project after Canadian officials failed to persuade the Biden administration to reverse its cancellation of the company's permit. Calgary-based TC Energy says it would work with government agencies to ensure a safe termination of and exit from the partially built project. The union that had threatened to strike at a Smithfield pork processing plant in South Dakota says it has reached a tentative agreement with the company on a 4-year contract. The Sioux Falls chapter of the United Food and Commercial Workers had negotiated with Virginia-based Smithfield Foods for 2 days after union members rejected a previous contract proposal and authorized a strike. Union leaders say its members will vote on the proposed contract next week. The union says the company dropped plans to take away a 15-minute break and, quote, the parties have reached an agreement on wages. A nuclear-capable stealth plane is coming to western South Dakota. The United States Air Force is selecting Ellsworth Air Force Base as the first home for B-21 bombers. The planes are currently under development. U.S. Senator John Thune says it's exciting news. Ellsworth was almost closed 16 years ago by the Base Realignment and Closure Commission, or BRAC.
It's a once-in-a-generation historic opportunity for South Dakota. When we've gone from, in 2005, BRAC to the B-21, it's an amazing story.
Thune calls the B-21 Raider a next-generation bomber.
And you've got a weapon system, I think, that is going to be very well equipped to serve our country's national security interests, not only currently, but well into the future. And I think it's being designed with that in mind. Just the long-range strike capability, the extended deterrence that comes with this, those are all features of the B-21 that I think will serve our country very well.
The B-21s will gradually replace the existing B-1 bombers at Ellsworth, some of which have already been decommissioned. Officials say the B-21 will add 3,000 people to the Black Hills area. The U.S. Small Business Administration is helping organizations that assist small businesses. It's called the Community Navigator Pilot Program. 100 grants will be awarded nationally to nonprofits, local and tribal governments, and SBA resource partners. Those organizations will use the money to help small, local businesses that suffered economic loss due to the pandemic. Jamie Wood is the director of the South Dakota District SBA office. She says the priority is assisting businesses owned by women, veterans, and people of color.
And it really is meant to pull these organizations closer to the SBA network to conduct targeted outreach to small businesses that are primarily in underserved communities and to really help these small businesses get the resources and support they need to get back on track as the economy continues to recover.
Wood says many South Dakota businesses felt the effects of the pandemic.
Even here, we've been primarily open the entire time, but there's been a lot of folks that were not able to go to work or businesses that weren't able to keep their staff on the job.
The SBA offers local assistance for the application process. That includes a translator option with over 100 languages. Grant awards will range from $1 million to $5 million over a 2-year period. Applications are open until June 12th. For SDPB News, I'm John Wynn.
And I'm Lori Walsh. The notion of eliminating South Dakota's tax on food has been popular among Democratic legislators in the State House for years, but it hasn't gained much traction among the Republican supermajority. South Dakota News Watch recently hosted a panel of economists to explore the issue further. Danielle Ferguson reports for News Watch, and she's joining us now inside the Kirby Family Studio in SDPB Sioux Falls Studio with her insight. Danielle, welcome to In the Moment. Thanks for being here.
Hi, thanks for having me.
How long have you been with News Watch?
Oh, man, just about a little over 2 months.
2 months. And yes. From Argus Leader was where you were at before, correct?
Yep. I spent about 5 years covering law and order and criminal justice issues for the Argus.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about food tax and, you know, the economy of that. And you gather this panel of people for this this live conversation, which people can go back and listen to if they missed it on the NewsWatch Facebook page. Yes. Tell me a little bit about the panel discussion, and then we'll talk about some of the insights from it.
Yeah, sure. So we hosted the panel last Thursday. We hosted some economists who talked about results from a recent poll that we did. And in that poll, respondents had said that they didn't feel that they were as well off financially as their parents. And so we kind of wanted to explore that further. Like, what economic factors are at play here that South Dakotans just don't feel very optimistic about the future here? And toward the end of that conversation, Bart Van Cook, my colleague, had asked, you know, what's something we could focus on, or what's something that could help that? And two of the four economists had said eliminating food tax would be a huge benefit to lower-income families in the state.
Interesting. All right. Mm-hmm. For people who have moved to the state or need a little refresher course, we don't have an income tax.
Right.
We have property tax, and then we do have a tax on food, which many states have decided not to do. When you mm-hmm. heard the economists and you did your own reporting on this, what is the effect of that, basically, overall on the state's economy? And on people's lives, really.
Yeah. So, you know, we have the sales and use tax. Gets a good chunk of the state mm-hmm. general fund. And I talked to some advocates who are in support of getting rid of the food tax. And they said that, you know, the 20% of the lowest earners in the state spend almost 7 to 8 times as much more on that tax than the top earners in the state. And that eliminating the food tax would save lower-income families enough money to pay for almost a month's worth of groceries. That was just kind of shocking once you mm-hmm. think about it. You know, you go in with a certain budget to buy food, and then a certain portion of that is also going to taxes instead of maybe buying another loaf of bread.
Yeah. Not a lot of traction in the past with state lawmakers. It usually, you know, there's usually a bill brought by someone, and it doesn't often get out of committee. Why are we still talking about it?
It's a good question. I think it's going to be another topic this year. It was in the 2021 legislative session. It didn't make it out of committee. You know, opponents say that it would just create an unfillable hole in the budget. You know, where else are we going to tax that money? And advocates for it say it just still needs to be addressed, because we're one of 3 states that still use our full sales and use tax on food. You know, we have the 4.5% for the state, but then individual cities can also add that tax to it. They just say it's going to be something that could benefit lower-income families if it was gone.
Did you also hear the argument when it was, you know, the height of the pandemic, and we looked at what was lost during that time to the state budget, and the fact that we had a food tax was helpful because
right.
so many other industries were bottomed out and we weren't getting that support, as, you know, in the state coffers from, say, you know, tourism or mm-hmm. the hotel industry. Did the economists address that at all? Because there was also this great federal money influx
right.
that would have balanced that out. Any thoughts from the panel that you sort of recall being insightful about how the pandemic has changed, if at all, this conversation?
Absolutely. So the panelists themselves didn't actually address that, but I went back and actually listened to the 2021 legislative session on this bill, and one of the lobbyists for the state's Bureau of Finance had mentioned that many states implemented that sales and use tax after the Great Depression because it kind of stabilized other things that people weren't buying. People still had to buy food. Mm-hmm. So it was this way of kind of stabilizing that income.
A lot of history yeah. and a lot of impact on people's lives mm-hmm. today as well. You can find recording of the panel discussion on the South Dakota News Watch Facebook page, and find Danielle Ferguson's reporting as well as the other news from sdnewswatch.org. Danny, thanks for being here. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Ahead on the program, SDPB's Megan Feary reports on rainbow capitalism as we explore Pride Month in South Dakota. You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Many Confederate memorials are being taken down, but the house where Robert E. Lee lived just got an expensive renovation.
I don't celebrate Robert E. Lee, but I think he's a very good lens through which we can view how certain people thought about other persons. These ideas and beliefs are not dead. They need to be understood and contextualized.
I'm Elsa Chang. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Listen, beginning at 3 Central, 2 Mountain, on SDPB.
Program funding by a co-op agreement with the U.S. Small Business Administration. If COVID-19 impacted your business, SDCEO Women's Business Center offers complimentary confidential advice. More at bhsu.edu/SDCEO.
I am pleased to announce that SDPB has been awarded 9 Regional Edward R. Murrow Awards for our reporting in 2020. Winning categories include writing, video, features, sports, investigative reporting, continuing coverage, and the Overall Excellence Award. Your support makes it possible. Thank you for your partnership as we tell South Dakota stories. Award-winning reporting is what you have come to expect and what we continue to strive for at SDPB.
Program funding by the South Dakota Humanities Council, presenting this year's One Book South Dakota, The Children's Blizzard by Melanie Benjamin. Learn more about her virtual author tour and in-person Festival of Books appearance at sdhumanities.org.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Lori Walsh. June is National Pride Month, a time to celebrate the LGBTQ community. Advocates say South Dakota's laws and legislation are not friendly to the state's population, but there are more Pride events in the state every year. Now, some businesses show support with rainbow flags, others sell merchandise, but that kind of marketing has its opponents and defenders. SDPB's Megan Feary has more.
Stacy Berry and her husband co-own Covert Artisan Ales in downtown Sioux Falls. They opened in 2019, the same year the city had its first sanctioned Pride Parade. Berry says she and her husband are allies of the LGBTQ community.
We have the inclusion flag hanging in our tap room, and we have had people come in and see the flag and walk out, but it's like, it's not really the kind of business I need.
They wanted to do something special for Pride and created a locally produced drink. It's a rainbow-themed hard seltzer they call Project Inclusion. Berry says they want to help celebrate Pride, but she was hesitant about how their idea might be perceived.
It's not trying to make money off of Pride, you know what I mean? Like, I felt really weird about that, actually. But I think being in a state like South Dakota, it's really important to have people stand up and just say, hey, you know, you can come to us, you can be here, you can be a safe space.
Before moving forward with the seltzer, Berry contacted Matt Neufeld. He's the president of Sioux Falls Pride. She wanted to know what he thought of the idea. He liked it. So a portion of their sales will go to the Trevor Project. It's a nonprofit that focuses on suicide prevention in the LGBTQ community. Efforts to sell products to people in specific demographic populations is called niche marketing. Alexandra Chasen is an associate professor of literary studies at Lang College in New York. She's written about a change in marketing strategies in the early 1990s.
There's a fairly cynical turn on the part of mainstream corporate actors to start advertising to gays and lesbians. And the reasons that they did were basically profit motive.
Chasen says the 90s brought more visibility to the queer community. Marriage equality became a national issue. TV shows included LGBTQ characters and storylines. And advertising followed.
The other thing that folds into that is corporations understanding that they want to target what was being called an untapped market.
Companies like Subaru were some of the first to market to LGBTQ consumers. There was public backlash, but there was also support and sales. Other companies adopted the practice. Chasen says many people embraced these new gay-friendly businesses. Some were more cynical. But she says what Stacey Berry is doing at Covert Artisan Ales is very different. Chasen sees the value in it, especially in a conservative state like South Dakota.
It means something very different than it means walking up Fifth Avenue or, you know, walking in West Hollywood.
Chasen says she understands Berry's nervousness. Any public gesture can invoke criticism from LGBTQ groups or people who oppose them. Quinn Kaitner is the founder of Queen on the Scene. It's an online shop that sells pride pins and accessories. She's also a proud member of the queer community, and Kaitner says that matters.
A couple years ago, I was at a major pride festival, and I was really, really excited to buy some rainbow merchandise. And I was talking with the vendor and learned that it was someone who wasn't part of the community, had no intention of giving back. They were just there to make money.
A year later, she started her company. Kaitner says visibility matters. She says wearing rainbow gear sends a message that queer people exist in South Dakota. But she thinks where that gear comes from is important.
Businesses that have no intention of giving back, but were valuable enough as a community to advertise to and market to, it just feels vapid and shallow.
For Kaitner, who sells Pride merchandise matters, but not everyone agrees.
Why should I be offended? Some people may just want to buy something for cheap to support their cause. You need to look at the bigger picture rather than the smaller details.
That's Dana Berry. She's 18 and came out as bisexual almost 6 years ago. She's also Stacey Berry's daughter. Dana says her sexuality is a non-issue with her parents. She loves that they're allies both privately and professionally.
They really just want everyone to feel welcome. They're amazing.
Dana is excited about this year's Pride celebrations, but she says being bisexual is just one part of her identity. She hopes everyone's sexuality is openly accepted in the future. South Dakota continues to host more Pride events each year. From Aberdeen to Pier to Watertown, there are activities to acknowledge June as Gay Pride Month. Some people who study niche marketing say businesses will follow the trend, focusing more attention on the LGBTQ community in coming years. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I'm Megan Feary.
You can find and share all our news stories online at sdpb.org/news. Up next, we further explore inclusive business practices this Pride Month. What happens if your efforts to create an inclusive business environment alienate other customers? We'll talk about that and more after a break. You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
On the next Fresh Air, how ransomware became a big business and a national security threat. We talk with Michael Schwartz, one of the New York Times investigative reporters who got access to secret communications showing how the Russian-speaking cyber gang DarkSide attacked the Colonial Pipeline and provided tech support for other hackers. Join us.
This afternoon at 2, One Mountain on SDPB.
Program funding by Arts South Dakota, the annual Arts Education Institute, Band Director Institute, and First Annual Choral Director Institute go online July 12th through the 16th with grad credit available. Register at artssouthdakota.org.
Stay up to date with South Dakota Public Broadcasting. Sign up for newsletters from SDPB. You can learn more about what's happening at our studios, get encapsulated news, see previews of specials, and so much more. SDPB in your inbox. Sign up online at sdpb.org.
Program funding with your support and by McCrory Gardens in Brookings, planting over 40,000 flowers every spring. More information at McCrory Gardens.com. McCrory Gardens, ready to bloom.
Business and Community Development reporting on SDPB is supported by SDN Communications. Learn more at sdncommunications.com.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Lori Walsh. June is Pride Month, but for businesses, creating inclusive business practices, well, that's about more than waving a rainbow flag every now and then. We are joined today in the Kirby Family Studio in SDPB's Sioux Falls studio by a panel of guests. We have Adam Dale Jorgensen, Braden Bradfield, and April Dawn Smith. Jorgensen is a digital media associate for the American Civil Liberties Union of South Dakota, North Dakota, and Wyoming, frequent guest on this program. Adam, welcome back.
Hello. Thanks for having me on here, Lori.
Bradfield is co-owner and creator of Revolution Yoga and Cycle. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. I'm happy to be here.
And Smith is owner of Heart of the City Bakery in Sioux Falls. April, welcome.
Yes. Nice to meet you.
All right. Let's start with you, Adam, because it's become more and more popular, as we just heard from this feature with Megan Fury, for business owners to think about how to capitalize and market to specific niche audiences. Mm-hmm. But it's a little broader than that. So the positives of Pride and business and how they intersect, and then some of the things that you think maybe need to be considered thoughtfully.
Yeah. So I think the positives are, you know, when a business puts up a Pride flag or a sign that says all are welcome, it really shows people walking by or may not be familiar with them that all people are welcome there. You know, me as a shopper in downtown Sioux Falls, for example, when I see Pride flags, I'm more apt to frequent those businesses, you know, and just seeing those makes me feel more welcome in the community. But I think businesses could take it a step further and really put their, you know, profits, if they're selling Pride flags or whatever it is, towards organizations that are really working to make South Dakota a better place for queer people, especially in a state where we constantly see, you know, anti-LGBT legislation proposed. If I know a business is supporting an organization like, you know, the ACLU, Transformation Project, whatever that might be, I feel better about buying something from them because I know it's not just a marketing campaign.
If there's no flag, if there's mm-hmm. no sign that says all are welcome, are mm-hmm. there ways that you find businesses that, or you know, with your employer, that you feel that there are ways to talk about inclusion or be inclusive that doesn't involve a symbol?
Yeah, I think there is. It's your hiring practices. It's being open to people, you know, displaying their pronouns on their name tags. You know, I went to Target the other day and there's pronouns on people's name tags. Having that option is great. Or putting those in your email signature, things like that. And then really being conscious of like other businesses that they, you know, interact with and making sure they're not, you know, inadvertently supporting someone that's maybe anti-LGBT.
Let's say more about pronouns and asking people's pronouns. The default for many years has been what, and how is that default changing?
I think for a while, people just didn't really talk about it. And I think having them more open out there makes people who may be non-binary or trans feel more comfortable to talk about their identity. And it's a sign of respect to use people's correct pronouns.
All right. Braden, tell me a little bit about your business, Revolution Yoga and Cycle. I'm already ready to start stretching now because I love yoga. So. Tell me about your business.
Well, we've been open for over 4 years now, and I have a business partner. And one of the big things that we do with our business is make sure that it's inclusive. We make sure that Pride is always in June, but there's also Pride all year round, just with making sure that it's inclusive to all people. We're a workout facility, so we want to make sure that it's about the mind, body, and soul and incorporating everyone in it, making sure everyone feels accepted and knowing that we're in this together, it's not an individual thing. So we have a lot of group classes that, you know, being next to someone in that group class, you kind of push yourself towards it. And just knowing that we're all in the same field and we're trying to strive for the same thing and just finding greatness. And some people come to our studio for the workout. Some people come for the release, tension release. Some people come for everything. You know, I mean, there's just multiple reasons they come. And as a gay owner, it's nice to see that our community has really expanded. There's not a lot of conversation about it, but it's just a known, the biggest thing that I want our company to do is know that this is an inclusive place and everyone is welcome.
So do you teach fitness? Do you teach yoga yourself?
Yep. I teach yoga and Cycle and TRX, and I'm also a high school teacher in our city too.
Okay. So we're talking when people come into a space with yoga, especially, tell me if I'm on the right track here. You're spending time
in your own mind, you're spending time in your own physical body. And for many people, whether it's a size issue, whether it's a transitional issue, or whether it's just I grew up and I wasn't comfortable being in my body because I got these cultural messages or messages from my family that something about my body was wrong, or I walked too gay, or I did something. There has to be an emotional release sometimes for participating in yoga and really thinking deeply about body and breath, and yet processing some of that heavy stuff that people can bring to the table or the mat.
Yeah, that's one thing that I like to brag about. Our instructors, I always say, are the best in the state. We have really inclusive instructors that make you feel comfortable when you walk through the door. And, you know, working out is something that it can be a body issue, but it can also be a mind issue. Like, just connecting with your body is something that a lot of people have a hard time with. And you're right, you know, do I sound too gay? Do I look too gay? But when you're on the mat, we're all in it together. So making sure that you can connect with that mind, body, and spirit onto the mat is really important.
Yeah. April, tell me a little bit about your bakery.
Heart of the City gluten-free bakery. So nice. We're the unbakery bakery. So the whole purpose of our bakery is that everyone can have a treat. Like, everybody needs to be included. You go to a wedding and you're the one person that can't have dairy. Well, now what are you going to eat? Or you can't have gluten, or you can have peanuts. So we're there to take care of everyone else that no one else knows how to take care of nutritionally. So I suppose inclusivity just falls naturally into that, and it's how I grew up. I mean, I grew up the tomboy chore kid, and I've been kicked out of plenty of bathrooms. So I am a girl. So it's, my heart goes out to, you know, like my trans niece and my nephew. You know, it's like, this is hard. This needs to be dealt with. So what we can do is we have our Pride bison cookies, you know, and any misfit at the bakery, a donation goes to Pride. So it's like, and then we just save it up at the end of the year. And
for radio listeners, describe physically the Pride bison cookie.
The Pride, yes. Bison. It's the outline of a buffalo or bison, as you were, and then it's just the rainbow flag.
The rainbow flag there.
So, yeah. And you'll see, like, I love seeing the stickers on the back of cars, or the stickers in business windows, or little pins, because then I'm like, oh, I can talk to you. You know, like, it's safe. Like, I could say anything to you, and we're not going to come to blows accidentally.
Okay. So say more about that with customers who come in and are bothered by that, or troubled by that, or don't want it, you know, I don't want this in my face, they might say, or this is, how do you deal with that as a business owner?
Or we get, oh, you have God's rainbow on a buffalo. You know, it's like, I've learned to walk past conversations, but it also is a great conversation opener. You know, I've had people see what it, like last Saturday, I had a young man who was still trying to learn how to explain pronouns to his family. And it's like, we just happen to have a trans colored bison. And it's like, okay, let's give this to grandpa. Like, I love you.
It's trans colored bison. Describe that for people.
Pink and blue. My daughter's the one that does all of it. So she has all the flags memorized. But it's just, it's pink, blue,
and
white.
Yeah.
Buffalo.
Yeah.
But nobody who doesn't know what it is knows, you know. So it was just, he was thrilled that there was something there for him.
Yeah.
So, but it's, we walk off with a lot of conversations, a lot of people who just will look me or my daughter in the eye and just tear up. And it's like, okay, I got the register. You go chat, you know, because it's just, I don't know. Yeah.
Do you find that with being gluten-free too? I remember I had to be gluten-free for like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And now I don't have to be anymore. But the first time I had a bite of pizza, like, I cried because it was like, oh, it was gluten-free pizza, but it was pizza, and I finally got to have pizza again after, like, 2 years of not being able to have that. So, again, body, food, connectivity is something that is deeply personal, and now all of a sudden I have a spot at the table.
Yeah. Well, and I've got more widowers who come get caramel rolls because they taste like grandma's or their wife's. It tastes like an old-fashioned caramel roll. And it's nice to let them hang out with the 30-year-old mom who hasn't had a caramel roll for 4 years because they don't exist where she's from.
And it tastes like a caramel roll.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you go work out because you're doing caramel rolls.
I should take a cycle class.
Yes.
Exactly. It keeps business going.
Yes. We work together.
Adam, for businesses who are sort of wading into this, but don't, you know, they want to be allies, but they don't have anyone to talk to and they feel awkward saying, oh, how do I do this? Like, what are some of the tips for you?
Yeah, I would say take a community-informed approach on it. Reach out to an organization like the ACLU, Equality South Dakota, Sioux Falls Pride to see how they could be the best ally. Because I know people go in it with good intentions. You know, they want to support the community or say that they're open to everyone. But I know they don't want to offend anyone either. So I think it's just not being afraid to ask questions and not being afraid to, like, make a mistake and learn from it, too. You know, that's an important thing to do, I think.
Yeah. Starting your own business. Let's talk about that. Are there obstacles, benefits, opportunities for queer people who want to go into business and really create their own space in whatever that might be?
Yeah. You know, I grew up in Sioux Falls, so I'm a native to Sioux Falls, and I love this community, and I love what it does. And, you know, there's always that, you know, the world has changed in the last 10 years, and there's always that fear of, is this going to be okay? Is it working? But honestly, when it comes right down to it with our business, is that you're a human being and making sure that when whoever walks through the door, you greet them with a smile. And we've had really, we have really great customers. And, you know, opening up a business has really opened my eyes to what's going on. It kind of gave a pulse on the community. And really, it's refreshing to see how many people are just supportive of people. And that's really important to me. And it's kind of made me have even a deeper feeling of greatness to this community.
Yeah. So this has kind of been sort of a Sioux Falls conversation, but as we just heard a few minutes ago, Watertown, Aberdeen, Pier, lots of places are having, you know, Pride celebrations in a variety of ways. April, what for businesses across the state who are listening and they live in a town where they're just not really sure this is, you know, do I wade into this because I live in a rural community where I'm not seeing this around me a lot? What is some of your advice to kind of taking some of those first steps?
I don't know. I guess we honestly spend so much time in Sioux Falls because I grew up in a small community that won't accept that. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's like we're still coming there. See, and that's where I'm getting too personal. Having lost my brother last year, it's so many of his classmates would message me after, you know, he passed. And it's like, oh, my God, I miss him so much. And it's like, you never accepted any portion of who he was. Mm. So now that he's famous and deceased and getting national attention, you're just stealing life. Like, I still haven't gotten past that. And a lot of that's my personal. You know, I can also walk into my small town home and know the dozen people who are totally supportive of the fact that we're just humans. Like, we're all just in the same human race, and we're accepting of that. So I'm afraid I don't have good advice. I mean, I would say just sneak some rainbow flags out and see what happens, you know? Yeah. But it's... that's why I'm here. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. That's why you can contact the ACLU. That's why you can look out and see who is doing it. You know, if you walk into a business that you feel comfortable because they have a rainbow flag out there and maybe not everyone behind the counter looks like the norm, talk to that business owner and get advice from them to see where they've been and where they come from.
So. Adam, talk about the work of the ACLU as you work in multi-states.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is... just say more about that and offering support to people who live in communities or places where they don't feel this is a conversation that they can have, or they're listening now and they think, hey, that is a Sioux Falls conversation. It's not for us.
Right. Yeah, I would say our work, we try and take a community-informed approach to this. So whether it's, you know, helping people figure out how they can be a better advocate for issues that they care about. Specifically, I think of the legislative session, you know, that happens from January to March in all the states that we operate in. So it's educating people on, you know, LGBT issues at the Capitol, how they can stop bad bills from being enacted into law, and then also how they can keep that conversation going year-round with their lawmakers to say, hey, like, we are LGBTQ+ and two-spirit people. We are here, we matter, and this is why. Because I think a lot of these lawmakers just aren't informed about the issues facing our community, and they might honestly not have met a queer person that they know of in their life. I think of, you know, House Bill 1008 in 2016 with Governor Dugard. He claimed to never have met a trans person. And then after he did and talked to some families, he said, oh, I see the human impact to these things. Mm-hmm. So it's making sure there's always, you know, the human aspect to these conversations. And that's what we do, is bring those folks to the table as the ACLU, whether it's connecting them to their lawmaker or to their community too, you know, connecting them to Sioux Falls Pride and say, hey, like, there's these community events going on. It's great visibility. Wherever you live, you should go, whether it's in, you know, Aberdeen, Watertown, Pier, Rapid City, you know, Del Rapids, wherever you are. I think there is community for people. It's just finding it and getting connected to them.
Sioux Falls Pride, June 26th.
Yes. Yeah, and the parade is back, too, which is exciting.
Sioux Falls. Yeah. All right. Well, my guests have been Adam Dale Jorgensen, who is a digital media associate for the American Civil Liberties Union of South Dakota, North Dakota, and Wyoming, and also April Dawn Smith, who is the owner of Heart of the City Bakery, and Braden Bradfeld, who is with Revolution Yoga and Cycle as co-owners. Thank you for being here. We really appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Let's take a moment now to peek behind the stage curtain of a drag performance. Today, I want to share something with you from my personal audio archives. This is an excerpt from a conversation with my brother, Wes Byers. Wes died of cancer in June 2020 at the age of 53. Wes was a voracious reader and bookstore manager. He was also a drag queen and female impersonator. He performed as Roxy Marquis. I asked him to tell me about how he found drag as an art form, and he told me about a visit to Club 332 in Sioux Falls in the 1980s.
And there was a drag show that night, and it was packed, and we just kind of sat in the very back of the bar, and there was that queen. There was a queen on stage named Rita Nouveau. It was fascinating to me that something was going on, and I couldn't understand it. These men would get up, men and women, but mostly men, would get up and walk up to her, and they had this look of reverence, and they were just kind of transported, and they would hand her money, and she would take it, and something was happening. There was something emotional and electric kind of happening in that moment, and I became kind of mesmerized by it, and I wanted to be that person behind the curtain, pulling the levers, and what? First time I ever went on stage, of course, I was all dressed up and glamorous, and you stood behind the doorway, and you'd hear them call your name, and then you'd walk out. And almost the first year, the very first number of the night, before they would introduce me, I would have to stand next to a garbage can because I would throw up in it. Mm-hmm. I would literally throw up. I'd be so panicked, and I would throw up, and then I would you wipe it away, make sure you didn't smear your lipstick, and turn around and walk out on stage. And as soon as the light hit you, everything was calm. But the moment before was just terror. The way I just knew that at that point, family was not unconditional love. I had discovered that there was a condition, and it was being gay. And I didn't fold and I didn't crawl back. I just knew. Once I felt that truth to myself and that honesty and that acceptance, it fed into all of my philosophies that I'm responsible for loving myself. I didn't come out because I was in love. I hadn't even been with a boy. I just was living my truth. Tell with it. And as long as I did that, then either everybody would come around or I'd go out and find my own family. And it didn't matter. Or I'd be by myself, but I'd go down being myself.
Everyone in Wes's family did, in fact, come around. He lived as himself. Wes Byers died in 2020. You're in the moment on listener-supported South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
I'm Robin Young. The FDA approved a new Alzheimer's treatment this week.
There hasn't been a new Alzheimer's treatment approved here in the United States for almost 20 years.
Good news, but there are a lot of questions. We'll speak with two physicians, one who says he won't prescribe the new Alzheimer's drug, one who says she will. Next time, Here and Now. This afternoon, beginning at 1 Central, noon Mountain, on SDPB Radio.
Program funding by TSP. Clients get the most from their facility with the collaborative design team at TSP. Architecture, engineering, interior design, and planning. Making your space and our communities better by design. More at TeamTSP.com.
Whether you've been listening to NPR for the last 50 years or for just a little while, thank you. We've been listening, too, to the sounds of events unfolding, to voices from communities across the country and around the world. Then we turn all that sound into stories about big news events and ordinary folks doing extraordinary things. NPR, then, now, and next.
SDPB, South Dakota's NPR station for 50 years.
Program funding is provided by First Dakota National Bank. Every big endeavor begins somewhere, with someone who has a dream and the passion to make it happen first. FirstDakota.com/first.
You're listening to In the Moment on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Lori Walsh. Could you grow a plant? This week, South Dakota Home Garden has Eric Helland with Landscape Garden Centers in Sioux Falls talking about indoor plants and the greening of our interior spaces. Plus, it's hot.
Yes.
And I'm wilting. I don't know if the plants are wilting, too. So let's talk a little bit about heat as well. Eric, thanks for being here. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, you bet.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about that stuff that you can bring indoors. What are some basic guidelines to think about before you choose a place for your plant and what kind of plant goes in that place?
Sure. So indoor plants, actually, this is like the perfect time to actually be enjoying them because it's almost too hot to be outside.
Yeah.
So indoor plants, they are awesome because they're a health benefit. Having them inside your house, whether it's a house, office, or whatever, they've actually done studies on this, and they actually are a benefit to a person's well-being. And so houseplants can be purchased or you can be growing them all year long. And that's what makes them so fun because it's something that's ongoing. Now, people will also think that, oh, that's really hard to take care of or what do I have to do? Just neglect them. I always say that is the best thing to do because houseplants, they're in a consistent environment. Humidity is typically consistent, the temperature, and then light is the only thing that will change based with the seasons. South windows, yes, they're still warm, but actually the south exposure of a window is actually probably greater in the wintertime because that sun's down at that's a different angle, right? So that is something to consider is that indoor plants are a lot easier in some cases to handle or take care of than outdoor plants. And so, like right now, we're always watering outside because we have to maintain it because the temperatures have been been fluctuating, too hot, basically, right? And then they get a little bit cooler. And so they just require a lot more attention.
Yeah.
And so that's the one thing about houseplants or indoor plants, because people can have them in their offices, which you actually should get one for your office here.
It's a lovely space here.
Yes.
It's kind of bright,
yeah,
but not direct sunlight. So I'm going to look for what kind of plant in a space that has some windows, but is not super bright all the time.
Well,
some natural light in here.
Yeah, you have light and you have the shades pulled because it would be mm-hmm. bright. So you could probably open up one or two, but you're pretty limitless with what you have here because you also have that eastern rising or the east, the sun that's rising. So, my favorite that I like the fiddle leaf fig. Mm. It's a really cool plant. It's really, really easy to take care of. That's a fun one. Dracaena is very common. That one is kind of spiky or a tricolor plant that they call. It's really easy. That's another easy one to take care of. Apothos is the viney ones that are really, those are simple too. There's just quite a few different ones or a lot of them that are out there. But a lot of times what we've been doing now is you'll take the houseplants outside in the summertime.
Mm.
And then, like, when it's hot and humid, they just flourish.
Like
as long
that.
As they get the moisture, yep.
Sure.
And then you bring them back in the fall, or you just bring them back inside in the fall, and then you might lose a few leaves in there. But that's a lot of times how houseplants have been used in the past. And it's just one of those things is – and we've seen such an explosion of sales – Really? With houseplants, yeah.
Yeah.
It is crazy.
Because people are spending time at home and they want something lovely to look at.
Right, because they know that it helps out with their well-being. They have to take care of it. They have to maintain it. And the plants don't talk back.
That's true. They don't need to be let outside to go to the bathroom.
Right, yeah.
They just love you no matter what.
Right.
Now, I have a spider plant, and it changes colors throughout the year. Like, sometimes its leaves are not as green, and sometimes they're darker green. What's happening there? Is that a sunlight thing? Is it just crying out for help at some point?
Yeah, so depending on what time of the year it is, I don't know exactly what that could be. But I would think it might be a light. Either it has excessive light. A lot of plants can actually get sunburned where they'll get too much sun. And so that can change the coloring. I'm not sure.
Me too. I get sunburned pretty easily.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, that's something that can consider. But the spider plants are awesome because you can keep on giving they'll shoot off springs.
And
you'll have tons of those. And those are a lot of fun. They're so easy to grow.
Yeah.
You're very successful at that, right?
I can handle the spider plant, and I have a Christmas cactus that's 150 years old or something.
Right.
I mean, this thing is
no pressure.
It's a history. That's when I adopted it, I said nobody can ask me if it's still alive or not because I don't want the pressure. But it's still alive.
Sorry, I just brought that up.
Well, again, you taught me how to take care of it. I needed to do less.
Right.
Because I was worried. So he's moving it around. Don't move him around.
Right.
Find a spot that they like and leave them there.
Exactly.
That was
just think about a tree outside.
Yeah.
You can't move a tree around.
Yeah.
And then they acclimate. Yeah.
Be a little less fussy. And that was that was a good thing. They kind of know what they're doing.
Right.
But pay attention and tend to them.
Yep. And a good, thorough watering.
Yeah.
Once every couple of weeks is just plenty. Because, I mean, remember their temper. Just because we're pouring gallons of water down our throats right now doesn't mean that the indoor plants need that. Just be consistent.
Yeah. So let's talk about those outdoor, you know, kind of in the heat. What it just water, water, water? What are some of the tips for, you know, people who put something in on Mother's Day or put their hanging baskets out?
Great question.
Yeah.
So right now, I could only stress is thorough watering. And when I say thorough watering is don't just throw a cup full of it. Make sure that you are a deep, slow trickle from the garden hose and just let it sit on that plant, especially if you just recently planted them. Even last year's plantings are going to need it. And even trees are going to need it. Right now, every tree takes up hundreds and hundreds of gallons through its root system and through transpiration. So it's very, very important is deep, thorough watering. So just let the water just trickle on it and do it. Again, just like we were talking about with houseplants, just do it once a week or once every 10 days when you can do it. It's not the best time to water, of course, is in the morning. But if you can't get it to the morning because you have to work your schedule conflicts, it still needs water. Lawns are another beast.
Mm-hmm.
Lawns, what you want to do right now is either put water on them once a week thoroughly and then stop mowing. Or really reduce the mowing, maybe mow. I'm mowing actually every 10 days now.
Yeah.
Rather than doing the weekly mow that a lot of people like to do. They mow and then they crank all of the irrigation on. But then what happens is that soil temperature gets too high. And once the temperature gets over 70 degrees for bluegrass or 72 degrees, then it just basically shuts down. So if you don't have that grass tall enough, it won't shade itself. And then that ground temperature goes up and it turns yellow. And then when you walk across or mow across it, you'll have these streaks or these tracks.
Okay.
So that's what you want to do is keep that grass as high as you can and water it when you can. Now, in some cases, people just say, well, I'll just let it go dormant. True, you can let a lawn go dormant by not watering it, but at some point, because the root crowns will still kind of stay there, but at some point it will just completely die off.
Mm-hmm.
And we noticed that a lot last year on these lawns because they died off too much. There wasn't enough rain, and so they went dormant, but then they didn't come back.
They didn't come back.
Yeah.
All right, so mow less.
Yes.
Fuss with your plants less. I like all this advice.
It's
and
easy.
Give things a good drink of water.
Yes.
And that sounds kind of nice too. And those trees, they need a little attention. My ferns this year have gone gangbusters. Like they've expanded.
Really?
Awesome. They're like half. I mean, there's another 2 yards of ferns there. And I'm like, I think I'm just going to let that stay there.
There you go.
It looks nice. I like it. All right, we're going to talk a few ways about how listeners can be part of the SDPB gardening and growing community. Of course, you can join us here on Thursdays. Eric Helland is with us, and he'll answer your questions if you send us an email in the moment at sdpb.org. You can send that throughout the week, and we'll get your questions in queue. You can also join other South Dakota gardeners on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. The hashtag is SDHomeGarden. It's also a digital series posted every week, sdpb.org/sdhomegarden. You can hear Eric Helland talking about how indoor plants are like a Dr. Seuss book. And on that video today, it's also on SDPB TV throughout the weekend. Eric, thanks so much for being here. It's always a delight.
Thanks, Lori.
The state golf championships have wrapped. SDPB's Nate Weck is with us now. He is joining us from the SDPB studios in Vermilion. Nate, hey, how's it going?
Hey, Lori, how are you today?
It seems like an awfully hot time of the year to be out golfing. I don't know. Maybe not. I guess I'm not a golfer, so.
Yeah, I was there Monday, Tuesday, and yeah. Man, there's some pictures online and stuff, too, that kind of help paint the scene a little bit, but yeah, when there's waiting, you find a tree and you stand under it for shade, and
yeah.
That seemed to be kind of the theme for the 2 days of the event.
Yeah. Okay. So this is the final state event of the high school year. Tell us a little bit about what transpired.
Yeah. So there's a couple main storylines that we can talk about, but I'm just going to run through the results super quick here. In Class AA girls, Reese Jans of Harrisburg won the individual title. O'Gorman won the team championship. Class A, Maya Muller won the individual championship. Sioux Falls Christian with the team. Class B girls, Jace Pugh of Miller won the individual championship. Seventh grader. Class B girls, team champion was Esteline Hendricks. And then the boys, Brady Bulches of Platte Gettys won the individual champion. And then Chester area actually had a chip in on 18 to secure the team championship, which was kind of cool because I actually was able to see that one with some of the other ones. Yeah, obviously I can only be in one spot at once. So that was one that I actually got to kind of see, and that was kind of cool. At the boys B tournament, obviously AA boys and A boys are in the fall. So we made it somehow to the end of the calendar year of all these high school activities, and we'll start again in October of 2021 with, hey, why don't we start with golf again?
Okay. All right, who are we going to hear from today? We've got some voices from the tournament.
Yeah, so the first one I think we need to talk about is Reese Jansa. She's a junior for Harrisburg. She scored a -8 at Baker's Crossing for the AA girls. And Kim Kaufman of Clark, who is currently on the LPGA Tour, she shot a -7 in 2008 at Hart Ranch out in Rapid City. So Reese Jansa's score of -8, it's presumed that it's a state girls record for golf at the state tournament. It still hasn't quite been confirmed for some of the earlier scores in the 70s and 80s, but really since the 90s on, this would be the best score that we've seen an individual have at the state tournament. So here's Reese Jansa talking about actually how COVID might have potentially helped her golf game.
I actually practiced more in that time than I ever have. I mean, not having school for about 2 months, I was out at the golf course every day. I practiced, and I just really found like my true talent, I would say. Like, obviously I can do better, but I know that this is where I stand.
Mm-hmm. I like that confidence that was born, and she spent all that time by herself figuring out what she's got. That's cool.
Right. And we've heard, you know, this from some athletes, you know, that we've had conversations about over this last year, too, that they've, you know, they use this time that, you know, if I can't, you know, do some of the normal stuff I want to do, I'm going to, you know, find something I like or find something that I'm good at and try to even get better. And, you know, we've seen that. And that's what Reese has done. She actually placed fourth, though, as well when she was a freshman. Last year, obviously, we didn't have the state girls golf championships because of COVID, but as a freshman she finished fourth, so she was even pretty good before COVID. It's not like COVID made her good, it just allowed her to polish those that skill set a little bit.
Yeah, squeezing a little lemonade out of those big fat COVID lemons. Yeah, it's not
exactly
a bad thing.
That's we'll a take, good way to put it, Lori. Yeah. I like it.
All right, who's next?
Yeah, so then the next one was Brody Bulches of Platt Geddes. He was the only senior to win a state tournament out of the four that happened Monday, Tuesday. So I thought, you know, we got to talk to him because it's got to be pretty special when you're a senior. It's your very last event. You know, winning a state title, that's kind of the dream that a lot of seniors have going into it. So I asked him about that. So here's Brady Bolchus of Platt Geddes giving his thoughts on winning a state title in his final high school round of golf.
You know, it's a lot of things. I mean, you know, it's finally all the work paying off. But, you know, I'm not playing any college after this. So, you know, it's kind of the surreal feeling of it all being over a little bit and being graduated and all that.
Wow. I always forget that part because I wasn't a high school athlete, that at some point that whole part of your life comes to a close. And these state championships are also maybe the last time a family might go and see their child compete in something really huge.
Right. Yeah. And it's one of those things that, you know, for a sport like basketball, mm-hmm. It might be a little bit easier to see that emotion in real time, just because, you know, there might be a late substitution. You know, if the score's separated by enough in that final game, coach might make a substitution to kind of give his seniors that curtain call, that standing ovation from the crowd.
Yeah.
And you kind of see it there, you know, where the eyes swell up and things like that. But at an event like golf, you know, you have to be so focused all the way from your tee off on one to your putt in on 18 that you probably can't really show any kind of emotion. Mm-hmm. If you're really locked in until it's completely done. So it's just a unique sport. And but it's kind of cool to see that, you know, there are some of these seniors that were given the opportunity to win a state title and ride off into the sunset, I guess you could say.
But then also, you know, not necessarily unique about golf, but certainly you get to keep golfing your whole life. There are people who golf. My grandmother golfed when she was 93. So it doesn't necessarily have a finish line. For, you know, storing the clubs, unless it's winter.
Yeah, golf. His high school, his competitive golf career, mm-hmm. you know, may be done. But, yeah, I mean, I'm a golfer, too. Well, a casual golfer. But you know what I mean? you know, it's one of those sports, like you said, that you can take with you through the rest of your life and participate in it socially.
Nice. All right. You ever have a hole-in-one or anything? Give me a good golf story, Nate.
I have never had a hole-in-one. I've hit the pin a few times. There was actually, I think, Olivia Rink of James Valley Christian actually hit a hole-in-one at day two of the Girls B tournament. And, of course, I was at the boys, so I didn't see it. But, yeah, it was cool that I'm like, hey, I'm in the same town as this. This is cool. So,
good stuff. Next up for the SDPB sports crew, South Dakota High School Rodeo Finals. The crew heads to Fort Pierre next week for the event, and that will be live on SDPB television on July 8th and the 11th after the event. Nate, enjoy the rodeo with the crew, and thanks so much for being here with us today.
All right. Thanks, Laurie.